It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, and our local numbers, 247-7282 or 353-4674 if you'd like to call in. And Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us today. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good to have you back in the studio.
Thank you.
Last week we started talking about homeowners associations, right?
Right. We'll talk a little bit more about homeowners associations this morning, Ben. We did refer last week to the Plain Community Act,
right,
under North Carolina General Statute 47F. We talked a little bit last week regarding the main issue in that, which is fines and assessments and those kind of things under the Plain Community Act. And we talked about the fact that, you know, a executive board or adjudicatory panel through the Plain Community Act can fine a property owner for being in violation.
Right.
That's what, at Harvell and Collins, we normally get questions about that more than anything else when the Plain Community Act comes up. That also rings true for the procedure for keeping or restricting someone's use of maybe the pool or the tennis courts or some common element, or also restricting voting rights, those type things. So there's that specific procedure that the association would have to go through in the event that they take the position that someone is in violation of the covenants, one of the owners. And that's under 47F-3-107.1.
And I'm not reading that.
And I'm not reading that from a piece of paper. I'm looking right at you as I say that because I deal with it all the time.
Well, you know, in other words, what you're saying, though, is there is a due process here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes in the past, you know, we've seen situations in old declarations and covenants where there's language that allows for these kind of assessments and fines and those type things. And it didn't really have a due process element. So what the General Assembly has done by putting this Plain Community Act in place is making sure that there is that due process. There's a right to a notice. There's a right to a hearing. Mm-hmm. It's not just a unilateral decision of the owners association through its board of directors or adjudicatory panel. But it's actually an open process where you give plenty of notice. This is the situation. This is what we think you're in violation of. If you think you're not in violation of that, you know, please come forward, put on your evidence, and let us make a determination based on that. And then there are appeal rights as well under the statute.
Yeah, I would imagine when people come to you sometimes it's the complaint that people are making things up out of whole cloth. I mean, they're just coming, there's nothing, nobody's been doing this before, or why are they picking on me?
No question about that, Ben. It seems like with homeowners associations, it always comes around that, you know, one group thinks another group is getting favoritism toward that one group, beneficial treatment toward them. And, you know, a lot of times that's true. It does kind of end up that way because you end up with like the neighborly aspect of a neighborhood on one hand where you want to be friendly to your neighbor and not construe these rules to that degree. But then all of a sudden you get one irate neighbor because their next door neighbor has painted their house hot pink or, you know, whatever. And then the board is in a position where, hey, they don't know what to do. They normally have kind of been very reasonable in assessing and analyzing and making the determination how these are going to apply. But then when you have that one property owner who comes forward who is very upset about it, the board is under a fiduciary duty to police and to enforce the covenants as they're written. So it's personalities. And what happens with these homeowners associations is, you know, we've got people from all walks of life.
Right.
You know, we've got retirees and we've got people who are experts as in other areas of the world other than real property management.
Right.
And they're trying to manage themselves. And sometimes those personalities and those people, they don't always do it right, and they sometimes clash. So
yes.
It becomes somewhat of a recipe for just conflict in homeowners associations. Well, and we do the best we can to avoid the conflict. I want to say that first and foremost.
The clash, though, is kind of often stems from sort of the fundamental feeling as Americans of this is my property. I have my right to do what I want to on it. And they don't realize that when they move into a particular neighborhood or buy a house that has covenants, they've abrogated some of those rights.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And we have said often on the program, but let's repeat it once again. I mean, when you are purchasing a property, caveat emptor, buyer beware. I mean, it really is your responsibility as a buyer to ask very diligent questions about the community that you're about to purchase in, and ask the realtor or ask your lawyer. Many times keep in mind that to get you the declarations, the history, the bylaws, the covenants, of course. Of course, keep in mind that many times by the time it gets to the lawyer's office, there has already been an offer to purchase and contract.
Right,
so the buyer has really gone, pretty far in their decision making to purchase the property. There certainly are times where we get a call saying, I'm considering buying this property, but I have some questions about the covenants, the restrictions, and I'd like to consult with you about those things before I sign the offer to purchase and contract. But no matter where it lines up, the bottom line is that these are important things for all of us as prospective buyers to be aware of and to get information on and to study and look at the history of the community and pending litigation or pending claims. This is telling of the way in which this community, is acting.
Is there a way, I mean, are minutes, is there transparency here that you can actually go back and see what kind of actions they may have taken against other property owners in the past?
That's, I laugh a little bit when you say that because I have dealt with that issue in
a lot
in court before. My client comes to me being the homeowners association and maybe they've taken some action. Then we look back at whether the action, was valid under the covenants or the planned community act. And we sometimes get to the point where the property owner, the person that we think has violated the covenants and that we take the action against that's who's irate, looks back at us and say, well, where are your minutes where you were even voted in? Well, if the association does not keep meeting minutes and does not, have a quorum, and we need to talk about quorum a little bit because that's a big issue too. Then, actions taken at meetings, are really of no effect.
Yeah.
So if you've got, let's say, a board of six people or seven people, whatever it might be, and they've taken some aggressive action to get some property owner for an alleged violation of the covenants, and then that property owner say they lawyer up and then they say, okay, let's produce your documentation where you show, for example, you had a quorum. If you can't do that, then it's kind of his word against our word as it relates to whether this board was even the actual board. So homeowners associations out there should take heed of that and should really, really, have a secretary who keeps the minutes, who keeps the documentation with regard to meeting minutes.
Long-time listeners are going to say this sounds a lot like what we talk about with corporations.
It is a corporation.
Yeah, you got to act. You got to act like one, right?
That's right. No question about that. Now, when we talk about quorum, this is very important. Basically, a quorum is, as stated in our bylaws, the amount of owners of property in a homeowners association that we have to have at any meeting in order to conduct any business.
Right.
Okay? Usually, that's stated as 67% or sometimes 50%. Sometimes it's lower than that. But if we don't have the quorum there by person or proxy, it could be either way if the bylaws allow that.
Right.
Then we need to have a vote at that meeting to adjourn and have a new meeting, let's say 1 week later. Well, the Planned Community Act allows you to do that, and then the quorum is cut in half.
Oh, so if they don't get it the first time.
That's right. So let's say you need 60 lots and you only have 40 people show up, or 40 mm-hmm. lots that are represented at the meeting. Well, let's adjourn, come back 1 week. If we have 40 again, we're good to go.
Mm-hmm.
We can go ahead and conduct business. We can vote on things like, anything really. I mean, vote on assessments. You know, we can vote on issues regarding common area. We could vote on who our new board members are going to be, have elections, do all those kind of things. But if we don't have that quorum, you know, we may think we've done what we're supposed to do, we're not doing it.
Is the number or the size of the quorum, is that set in a covenant or set in the bylaws of the?
That is usually in your bylaws.
It's in the bylaws.
Yep.
So in the bylaws, can that be set at a fairly low bar? I mean, you typically set it at a majority property owners?
Cecil, I mean, 60. Normally I see 67%.
Yeah, I was going to say 67%.
That's super majority.
Yeah, it's just almost always what we see. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, it can be contractually set at, any.
I've been part of organizations where they said that the people present represent the quorum. So,
It has to be very specifically defined. Mm-hmm. It's an area that's oftentimes misunderstood.
Yeah. I've been, the last time I was a member of a homeowners association, the meetings there were very poorly attended. I can't imagine there was ever a quorum there. So that would be one of the things you wouldn't bring up if you were in question about it.
Right.
That's right.
All right, we'll take a short break. We'll come back with more. If you have questions, too, about how homeowners associations act or are supposed to act, you can call in 800-818-2255, local for Carteret, Craven, and Pamlico County, 247-7282, and in Onslow County, 353-4674. And we'll have more to come with Harvell and Collins. You can go on their website, too, harvellandcollins.com. And we'll have more to come in a moment. Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. We're talking about homeowners associations.
Ben, let's lay out a very common factual scenario, which is a lot owner who, for whatever reason, just unilaterally elects to no longer pay their dues.
Okay.
Maybe they're underwater in a foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they have an environmental issue with their property. They have now found out that it won't perk, or it won't allow them to build a 3-bedroom as opposed to a 1-bedroom.
Right.
Maybe they just are financially not paying.
Mm-hmm.
But we have so many folks, so many associations where just for whatever reason, mm-hmm. this particular lot or those particular lots, those three, are not making any payment whatsoever.
Okay.
So let's go through from start to finish kind of how that would frame up in light of what we've been talking about and this particular act.
All right.
Yeah, and we normally get this question from the homeowners associations. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, we're not dealing as much with this question with property owners asking the question, way behind on my assessments, what do I do? Well, the answer to that is you've got to work out a deal with the association, or you've got to, pay the assessments. Otherwise, you're going to be subject to this procedure that I'm about to lay out.
Mm-hmm.
But, for homeowners associations, when they have properties, that are just way behind with regard to their assessments, they have some decisions to make as it relates to how aggressive, they're going to be. And the process that we go through is really a foreclosure process.
Mm-hmm.
The association has a right to foreclose on the property. They have certain obligations as far as giving notice that they're going to start that procedure.
Their due process.
That's right. They're going to collect attorney's fees. If they don't mm-hmm. say that they're going to collect attorney's fees as a part of this and give at least 15 days notice of that and do that explicitly in the writing, giving notice, then they're not allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. So there's, a couple steps that the association, has to go through in order to foreclose. But the association can't just jump right into a foreclosure. And the reason why is because in many cases, our lien for assessment is not first in line.
I was going to ask you that. Usually, if you're going through that process, they're probably in under foreclosure already, or maybe close to it.
They could potentially be in foreclosure already. So, obviously, the first thing we do as the attorney is we search the title to see where we are in our line. Now, mm-hmm. the priority of the lien for the association will take basically line up as of the date that the notice of lien was put on record.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and by the way, under the Planned Community Act, the notice of lien has to be acted upon within 3 years of when it was docketed. Otherwise, they can't act on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to take that into consideration, too. But the process, of course, if we make the determination that we're second in line and we know we have a first in front mm-hmm. of us, we need to do some due diligence at that point in time to determine how much that first is. Now, if we think the property is worth, say, $200,000, and there's a $50,000 equity line in front of us, and
mm-hmm.
that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're owed, you know, $10,000 of back assessments, being the homeowners association, then it may be certainly in the association's best interest to go ahead, give the notice, proceed with the foreclosure process, which they absolutely have the right to sell the property just like a foreclosure that we see in Beaufort or wherever it might be.
Say right. somebody is in the foreclosure process mm-hmm. under their under their finance whoever they finance their house with,
and right?
It's foreclosing on them. Can you attach to that as a homeowners association?
No, you cannot attach. You are wiped out if you're second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if the first deed of trust is foreclosing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, through the trustee, then if you're second in line, then the homeowners association's rights in that property mm-hmm. to foreclose would be wiped out.
Ben, that's really not that unusual. That's we just all understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Back on the other point, there are so many lot owners that just elect not to pay their
mm-hmm.
lot dues.
Right.
They're not in foreclosure.
Right.
They own the lots free and clear.
Mm-hmm.
They are upset about something that happened in the subdivision. They financially, for whatever reason, think that the dues are too high. They might be absentee. Maybe there's been a death and the will hasn't quite yet been probated, or mm-hmm. maybe there wasn't a will. I mean, there are so many reasons where people just for whatever reason do not pay the lot owner fees. Now, the foreclosure one is kind of, that has a whole body of law. That's really not exactly what we're kind of referring to. That's one of the many
sure.
ways it can frame up. But that, of course, is going to take – the foreclosure law is going to trump, and it's going to take its usual course.
But outside of that, you have people just don't pay.
And that's what we're kind of talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
So when we foreclose on the property, let's say that we're second under that scenario. Well, we know that there's – a $50,000 first in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who's bidding on the property is bidding it subject to that 50.
Mm-hmm.
They know they're going to take the property subject to that, but that still may be a good deal. I know this is a little complicated. I'm trying to make it simple.
Right.
But if it's a $200,000 property, and let's say you get it for $60,000, hey, it's a good deal. And
mm-hmm.
you've taken that risk. You've searched title. You see that you're buying it for the $60,000 as opposed to $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good deal, but you're still buying it, subject to that. Now, as far as dispersing funds, if we have a third party that comes in
mm-hmm.
and bids,
mm-hmm.
and let's say that as the trustee, we receive the funds, of course, we're going to have to pay the first.
Right.
And then we, pay the second, and then anything that's left over, is going to go to the property owner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's typical, with a foreclosure.
Right. But again, people just not paying. And you go through that process, it is still subject, as you said, this doesn't happen overnight. I mean, how
yeah.
far behind typically does somebody get on their dues before these actions start to mount up?
You're normally $5,000-$10,000 behind because there's an expense associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, my goodness, this is a drastic measure to take against a property owner. And usually we're at a point where there has been a year or so of effort to try to contact the property owner, and there's just no response before we, get to this point.
Right. So it could be a couple of years behind in dues.
Right. And sometimes associations take the position that, hey, we've got 25 lots here
mm-hmm.
where they bought these lots maybe at the height of the market.
Mm-hmm.
They're absentee owners. They never built anything. And they're collectively behind $20,000.
Mm.
Mr. Collins, we want you to proceed under the Planned Community Act because we feel like we have to do that.
All right. Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about that coming up in just a moment. Again, you can go online at harvellandcollins.com and listen to past shows and find out lots of great information. Look for newsletters as well there at harvellandcollins.com and call for that appointment too at 252-726-9050. We'll have more to come in a moment. Again, welcome back with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, and talking about homeowners associations here on Let's Talk Legal.
Right. We were just going through the foreclosure process for assessments and liens on property in associations for assessments. You know, just to wrap this up, you know, also what happens is sometimes the association is the high bidder on the property.
Yeah.
Now, once we foreclose, we don't have any other bidders. The association then owns that lot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So as a lot owner, what do you have to do?
Yeah,
you have to act like one. You got to pay dues, you know, basically to the association, you know, at that point in time. So the association would under that scenario, basically own the property.
But they want to sell it.
List the property for sale and try to get someone in there who is going to, of course, pay their dues, mm-hmm. build a house, you know, whatever. Same thing with banks. You know, when the banks foreclose on properties, you know, and they buy these properties because they're the high bidder on the property, whether it's a, you know, the properties we've heard about many times before, Summer mm-hmm. House, Cannons Gate, you know, lots of lots got foreclosed over there. These banks have an obligation because they're owners
mm-hmm.
to pay the dues as well.
Now, do covenants, is it covenants or is it bylaws? Let me get that straightened out. That may restrict how many investors, or how many properties that one, a single investor may own or in
That's going to be the, covenants.
In a covenant.
It's going to restrict the property.
I understand that's, more and more people now are kind of writing that into covenants to try to, prevent from a single person from going under and then nobody's paying dues.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that comes up. But it's all, as you said, it's all in the details. You have to go mm-hmm. back and read those covenants. You got to read those details. Take a look at the bylaws.
You know, it really has been something that I think all prospective buyers mm-hmm. should you need to put this in the mix,
mm-hmm.
okay? You know, is it an established subdivision? You know, I mean, there's a lot of safety in a very established subdivision. Are you buying in a brand new community? What mm-hmm. if you had been one of those people that was putting your dream home, if you will, in your dream family life, and I hate to single one out, but in one of the, let's just don't, one of those subdivisions
right.
that has completely gone under.
Yeah, because there have been
And now
several,
there
so.
Is no pool that there was supposed to be, and
right.
there are potholes in the road that there's no money to improve.
Mm-hmm.
And the outdoor lighting that's there, all the bulbs are burnt out, mm-hmm. and there is no one to change them because there are no funds.
Right.
I mean, this is a real problem. You're not going to have that problem in a established subdivision.
If you want to find out more and make that appointment, you want to call 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City for Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, 726-9050.